Hello and welcome. This podcast is one of a series of contributions to microscopy, with which we want to assist you with interesting topics from the field of practical microscopy. Today, Dr. Christian Hellriegel, application specialist from SAIS, will talk about the magic of fluorescence.
Welcome also from my side. Fluorescence is known to the layman as that strange neon tube glow luminescence that comes from some weird ink when shining that so-called black light on it. Have you ever been startled by the glow of certain types of makeup? Tonic water, tattoos, teeth, or dandruff on your night out in a club? Well, that in all likelihood can be ascribed to fluorescence. This beautiful and colorful phenomenon had startled not only the nightlife adventurers of the past decades, but has, for centuries, fascinated the curious minds of those working in science. The first documented observation of fluorescence can be found in the civilization of the Aztecs in pre-Columbian times. They had observed that the wood of a small tree that they called coatli released some form of opalescent bluish tinge when it was placed in water. From the color and its association with water, they figured that this solution must have some relevance in treating kidney and bladder ailments. This particular finding was meticulously documented by a Spanish Franciscan friar and ethnographer, Bernardino de Sahagún, from 1545 to 1590. Physician and botanist Nicolas Monardis independently described the same thing in his works, from 1565 to 1580. However, he laid emphasis on the botanical aspects of the phenomenon and the healing properties of the wood. It was the translation of this work by Charles de L'Écluse in 1574 that put this wood on the map of royalty all over Europe. He gave the wood the name Lignum nephriticum, wood of the kidney. And the next thing you know is you had all kinds of royals toying around with that fascinating piece of wood, opalescence, and the bluish color that emanated from it. Many scholars took a shot at understanding the phenomenon, but the first serious attempts came in 1670 by famous physico-chemist Robert Boyle. He, inspired by Monardis' report, investigated the lignum nephriticum more intensively. He discovered, among other things, that the wood gradually lost its power to give color to the water and concluded that the phenomenon could be attributed to some essential salt contained in the wood. He also discovered that addition of spirit of vinegar made the blue color vanish, and that alkali made the color return. In his own words, "I observed with pleasure that immediately upon the diffusion of this liquor, the impregnated water was restored to its former ceruleous color." Boyle was thus the first person to document the use of fluorescence as a pH indicator. Unfortunately, this publication received very little attention, and gradually, the story that was building up around lignum nephriticum and its fluorescence faded into oblivion. The structure of the fluorescent molecule in lignum nephriticum finally became elucidated only a few years ago in 2009. Parallel developments took place between 1830 and 1850. With the Industrial Revolution, the textile industry soon developed a strong need to find cheap and readily available stains and dyes to make clothes and curtains more colorful. Until then, the most wanted and most colorful dyes were obtained from natural extraction and were obscenely expensive. Naturally, this spawned a new interest in all things that emanate colors. Chemists worked around the clock to synthesize dyes from readily available chemicals, such as naphthalene or quinine. while physicists tried to figure out what makes these substances develop their colors. John Herschel, the father of photography, in a manuscript from 1845, described the case of a superficial color presented by a homogeneous liquid, internally colorless. A quinine sulfate solution in which he observed an extremely vivid and beautiful celestial blue color. Remember lignum nephriticum? Same thing. George Gabriel Stokes then, based on Herschel's work, thoroughly reappraised the phenomenon, called it fluorescence, and came to one fundamental conclusion laid out in a 100-page strong manuscript from 1852. Fluorescence is caused by light going into the solution and there somehow being returned with a shifted color. Further, the returned color will be redshifted with respect to the input color. Expressed in other words, blue light turns green, green light turns yellow, yellow light becomes orange, and orange light turns red. Of course, no one understood why this is so until the development of quantum mechanics, but that is another very, very complicated story. By 1920, fluorescence is understood, roughly speaking, as a mechanism of interaction between light and dye molecules. Light, in the form of photons, small packets, or quanta of energy, become captured by electrons moving around in the molecule. Immediately after this capture, the electrons, now with this extra amount of energy, move in different, more energetic paths. These new paths and the new movement of the electrons adapt to each other and find an equilibrium. Very, very quickly, in a few femtoseconds. A small amount of this extra energy from this original photon is used up to form this equilibrium. However, the electrons are still moving with a significant amount of energy. Eventually, nanoseconds later, this extra energy, minus the amount needed to equilibrate the paths, is released in the form of a photon. This photon now has less energy than the original one, and is therefore redshifted. This redshift is called the Stokes shift, in honor of George Gabriel, and is of fundamental importance in fluorescence microscopy. But that will be covered in the next podcast.
Thank you for listening and stay tuned. Visit www.science.com/campus.